Blog Talk Radio.
At 2 years old, she didn't speak or babble. She made no eye contact and bristled at physical touch. Yet her Sunday school teachers carefully tweaked lessons and class routines to accommodate her autism. Thanks to their enormous love and the flexibility of Heart Shaper Sunday School curriculum, the first word she ever spoke was the name of Jesus. Her name is Jilly, and she's a future Heart Shaper graduate. Heart Shaper for toddlers through preteens is proud to sponsor Shaping Special Hearts.
Welcome to Shaping Special Hearts. My name is Vangie Rodenbeck, and I am your host today. This show highlights ministry to children, teens, and adults with special needs, and we seek to resource, encourage, equip, and empower those who minister to and alongside them and their families. If you'd like to call in our show today, that number to call in is 424-258-9286, or if you're a little shy, you can join our live chat room at cmconnect.org. We have someone monitoring that room there, and if you are interested in today's topic and would like to just kind of chime in with a question, someone can field that question for us and get it to me and on my guest today. Today's topic is one that I have been asked about over and over and over again as I have spoken and been a part of workshops and listened to workshops. I've heard so many people ask this that I just knew it was something that I wanted to talk to someone about, and it is about volunteers. Everybody needs them. Everybody wants them. Everybody wonders how to get them, and they wonder how to keep them, and they don't want them to be lukewarm. They want them to be passionate. So the title of today's show is Passionate Volunteers, Where to Find Them and How to Keep Them. And as I was thinking about passionate volunteers, I think that passionate volunteers follow passionate people, and that is why today's guest is Harmony Hensley, one of the most passionate leaders that I know. Harmony has a background in vocational ministry, parachurch nonprofits, design, sales, and marketing. She can do just about anything. She has personally dealt with the stigma of disability, which makes this really an area of passion for her. She has helped launch inclusion ministry initiatives in churches across the country and currently serves as the senior project manager with Rebel Pilgrim Creative Agency, sharing stories that sparked hope and action. She's also an ambassador for 99 Balloons, seeking to change the story of disability globally. Harmony is a sought-after speaker, having spoken at national conferences such as the Accessibility Summit, Engage, Orange, the North American Christian Convention, Through the Roof, SOS, Be the Difference, and various churches across the country. She's also consulted with the Tim Tebow Foundation for their Night to Shine prom, and if you don't think that requires volunteers, you just have no idea. Harmony holds a dual degree in ministry leadership and biblical studies from Cincinnati Christian University, and has also previously consulted with Key Ministry, as well as Christian Church's Disability Ministry. She's a contributing writer for Rebel Storytellers and lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, with her husband, Skylar, and the apple of her eye, her son, Ransom. Harmony, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for thinking of me.
Our topic today is so universal for every ministry of every size, and I know that you personally have experienced this need in various capacities, shapes, and sizes as you've shared your passion for ministry through the recruitment of partners of ministries of various shapes and sizes and capacities. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your various experiences in recruiting?
Sure, that's a great way to start. I have had kind of a varied background in ministry. I have been that high-level volunteer who is, you know, at home with a laptop after, you know, the kids go to bed, trying to shift back into ministry mode to reach out and connect with people. I've been the paid pastor who had resources, you know, and 40-plus hours devoted to doing that sort of thing. So I've personally served at both ends of the spectrum, and I've also enjoyed, you know, my professional experience has largely been in the mega church environment, but in my work at Key Ministry, I worked with mostly smaller churches and often, you know, had people say, well, you know, you're from a big church background, you're used to having all these resources, and the reality is they all churches, regardless of size, face the same kinds of issues when it comes to volunteering. So we're really more similar than we are different, and there are lots of lessons we can learn from one another. So that's kind of where I feel like God has just really blessed me, because I have had so many different experiences. I've got a lot of things that I've been able to pull from, and amazing people that God's put in my path who have taught me lots of lessons on how to attract, equip, engage, empower, and unleash volunteers who are just on fire for what they're doing.
Absolutely. So I think you and I can both firmly establish that no ministry is an island accomplished by one person alone. We've both worked in small ministries that are just not one person, even though they may be started by one passionate person that may be a parent or a grandparent. But do you feel like this is especially true in special needs ministry?
Absolutely.
Sometimes there are some distinct obstacles for recruiting passionate volunteers for this kind of ministry, or I'm always presented with the idea that people perceive there are distinct obstacles for recruiting. So let's talk about that big elephant that's in the room right now.
Yeah, and I love that you phrase it that way. What I have found over the years when I'm recruiting volunteers for this particular genre of ministry, the elephant in the room is fear. So I usually, when I approach individuals, when I start kind of that conversation to invite them into this ministry, I call it out. I said, the elephant in the room is that when I say to you, I want to get you involved in our disabilities ministry or in our inclusion ministry, you immediately think of a child in a wheelchair who has a tracheotomy, who can't talk to you, and who's going to probably die on your watch. And, you know, that sounds very extreme, but there's this immediate sigh of relief, like, yes, that's what I'm scared of. You know, and so as a leader, it is my job to call out that fear and then to break down why that fear is not justified, or if, God forbid, those things should happen, how we're going to support you as a volunteer to make sure that you're prepared for anything. And so what I find in our ministry is getting volunteers is hard. Getting volunteers for inclusion ministry is a little bit trickier because the level of fear is higher than if they were just thinking, oh, I'm going to come and serve in the kindergarten room, you know, on Sunday morning. So we have, as leaders, a responsibility to kind of call that out and then speak truth over it so that we can get that barrier eliminated right away. So one of the first things that I do with potential volunteers is I talk about, you know, tell me what your understanding of disability is. What is your relationship to it? You know, a lot of individuals I find in my ministry, usually because I have aggressively pursued them, don't necessarily have a lot of background with disability. And if they do, it's one of, oh, I knew someone in school, you know, 50 years ago, but we never saw them or heard from them. Or, oh, I saw a movie, or nothing at all. You know, a lot of people, our culture, unfortunately, has done a very good job of basically segregating people with different abilities out of the mainstream culture. And so a lot of individuals have that fear because they have not interacted or really known an individual with a disability. So a big part of my job on the front end is telling the stories of the amazing people that God has put in my path and how they've helped shape my walk with the Lord. Because the reality is I have gotten, and I'm sure you've talked about this, Angie, because I know you and I have talked about this into the wee hours before, I always get more out of this ministry than I ever put into it. And I like to think I put a lot into it. Being able on the front end to calm those fears, but also call out, here are the people that we're going to serve, and here are the ways that I see your gifts lining up with what we need to reach this people group, and having a lot of conversations to just kind of calm the potential volunteer and understand that, you know, you're at a good place to enter into this.
I heard you mention something, and this is not necessarily something that was on our pre-interview sheet, but I heard you say something, here are your gifts and how they contribute. Sometimes I've been asked before, ministry leaders say, what's the skill set I'm looking for, Benji? You know, they kind of want to know, like a profile that I'm looking for. They want to know what to scan the congregation for. You know, I kind of always say, you know, a real good sense of humor. I think they're looking for like a medical degree or nursing background. And, you know, that's, of course, not a bad thing. Harmony, have you
come up with a criterion for that in your time, like a skill set or something like that?
For me, I always say, you know, the kind of people I need, all of them. But let me tell you what that means. I will unpack, you know, just like any other ministry, there are going to be administrative needs for this. There's a lot of scheduling that happens in disabilities ministry because we have to make sure that we have good coverage so that these families feel supported. So I need someone who has the gift of administration, who loves a spreadsheet, you know, who loves to schedule and check boxes and make sure we have information. So if you are a person who has a heart for details and a heart for administration, I don't care if you don't know a single thing about disability. That skill set is precious for what we're trying to do. I look for people who are very flexible and who don't require having all things figured out. An example of that, it's interesting you mentioned medical professionals. So I've had a lot of different ministries over the years and a lot of different environments, and I have been blessed to work with a lot of individuals from the medical profession who have all been a blessing in different ways to our ministry. And interestingly enough, in our respite ministry, I found if I am going to recruit specifically for the medical team, the people I look for is not always, I'm not necessarily looking for doctors or nurses, though they are lovely and wonderful. Paramedics and EMTs are fantastic because paramedics and EMTs, when you have a car accident and they come up on you and you're in a ditch in a cornfield, I'm from the Midwest, so that's how it would happen. They don't know anything about you, right? They know how to assess a situation, keep you safe, supported, and get you to a hospital where you're going to get the help you need. When I'm in a respite environment, I need people who can understand the medical scene enough to keep my kids safe, supported, and God forbid if there's an emergency, to get them where they need to be. And so I have found that I have had a lot of paramedics and EMTs actually thrive because we do, you know, our level best to get as much information about the kids and families we serve as possible. But the reality is, you know, I mean, Brandy, you and I have both seen some of these kids have medical files that could be stored in a library, you know. So to quantify that is very difficult for a parent. So I say I'm looking for people who don't necessarily have to know everything, every little thing about every little thing, and can kind of swim freely in the gray, you know, because that's what a lot of what we have to do in our ministry. And so people who are okay with kind of rolling with the punches are usually very well suited for a lot of our first contact teams, like a respite or an event team where we may not have a ton of relationship with the families just yet and are just getting to know them. And then I look for educators. If you are a teacher, if you are a corporate trainer, if you are somebody who knows how to convey information in a way that your audience can connect with and can engage, then you're going to be an excellent leader and potentially a trainer for new volunteers as we're onboarding them. Someone who knows how to take information and then, you know, process it and then disseminate it is really valuable. I also need people who, I always point out that I have a background in sales and marketing, and nobody knows what the, like why I would mention that in the ministry world. Well, that's because evangelism is basically just a different world for sales and marketing. We need people who are passionate about telling people really great stories about ways that God is moving. So I need people who are going to help me spread the message of our ministry. So if there are people who love to promote and market in the marketplace, you know, I need them in the ministry space to be able to tell the story of the work that we're doing and engage other people who might want to connect. I also look for people who just are good at the ministry of presence. I know some people who are as introverted as the day is long, but you know what? If I need someone to sit quietly in a quiet room that's, you know, for a lot of kids who have sensory integration stuff and just be present, those folks are worth their weight in gold because they have the ability to just engage in a very calming way with the kids that we serve. So what I will usually do is I will sit down with an individual one-on-one. We'll talk about what their passions are. What do they enjoy? I'll usually ask them about their day job or what they do, you know, with the bulk of their time and say, okay, what gives you life? What gives you energy? What are the parts of your job that you hate that you would, you know, just assume not do because we all have them? Let's figure out how to lean into the gifts that you have and really give you the opportunity to stretch that. There's also a really cool website called assessme.org where it is a faith-based kind of gifts assessment. It's an online assessment. It takes about 4 to 6 minutes. It's not terribly long, but I found in my ministry work, it's very, I think it's very accurate. And so it goes through and it will give the individual a report of what their gifts are, how they're going to be most successful in leveraging them, and also areas of, hey, if you want to frustrate this volunteer, ask them to do this, which as a leader, that's my favorite part because I want to know how to not frustrate them. Like the last thing I want to do is give a bunch of administrative tasks to a person who's a big picture person. So that's a great tool for those who maybe don't have the instincts to just quickly assess what a person's gifts are. It's a very good tool to be able to get kind of a more concrete read on what people would be good at doing.
Those are such great categories, and they're so different than typical ways ministry looks at. We can be tempted to look at putting people into ministry. I hope, listeners, that you will, if you're listening to this as a podcast, you will stop, rewind that, and listen and write those down and commit those to memory. That is gold, and that is worth you thinking about over and over again as you onboard people, as Harmony said, and think about bringing people into your ministry. Before we move on, because I want to talk about communication, because you touched on that, and I think it's so important. I don't want to go on until we go back to something you said when we were talking about knocking down obstacles. We talked about fear, and you talked about story. And that's something you and I believe in so much, about having people that could tell story, that could communicate story, because it's so important. And we're going to talk about reframing passion in a little while, and I think you're probably going to touch on it again then. But Harmony, talk a little bit more about how important it is to present the story of this ministry at the beginning.
Absolutely. The story sets the tone. I think if you're ever looking for someone who is really gifted at getting the masses mobilized with story, I would go ahead and read anything Jesus ever said. So when Jesus was connecting with an audience and he felt like they weren't getting it, he would say, "Let me tell you a story," right? And then he would tell them a parable or a story that would quickly outline what he was trying to get them connect with. And because that's Jesus is an amazing communicator, and he understands how to connect with your audience. And so for me, in the world of disability, there's so much negative press out there about, you know, how fragile these children are and what a liability it is and how you're going to get sued and you're going to get in trouble and you're not qualified to be with them, you know. And so I my whole thing is, if you want to change the world, you have to change the narrative. Change the narrative, you change the world, right? So I want to change the story of disability. So I often will meet, and as I'm hearing from a person, you know, kind of what their passion and heart is, I'm like, can I just tell you about some of the families we're going to be serving? And I'll tell them a specific story. Obviously, I get, you know, good permission from parents, and I know how to tell a story and change names and protect identity and all that good stuff. But I'll let them know, you know, so there's this single mom who lives a mile from the church, and she has literally not been to Target in 10 years. And so we didn't understand that, but we knew she was pretty isolated. And we were able to get connected with her through some community partnerships, and we invited her to bring her child to our respite event. And now it took us 6 months to get the level of comfort she needed to feel safe dropping her child off. And she was still very new to trusting other people with her child. She'd been largely homebound her whole life. And the only distance she was comfortable with going was across the street from our church to Target. And she spent 3 hours in Target and cried. The Target manager had to check with her to make sure she was okay, because she just was so impressed with everything, because, you know, Target's very different now than it was 10 years ago. And so all because we took the time to understand this mother's fears and what her concerns were, and to learn about her child and to create a space that was going to be a positive space for her child, where her child could come and connect in a meaningful way and feel safe and secure and supported, this mom was able to go to Target for a night. Like, I'm not trying to cure autism on a Friday night. I'm trying to connect with families and let them know that they are a family that God is chasing after, and that their children were fearfully and wonderfully made. And if you can help me figure out how to do that, we're going to change our city, right? That sounds way more exciting than saying, I have this event on Friday and I need to fill 25 volunteer spots and you're a warm body. Can I count on you? Nobody is excited about that. Nobody, right? I'm not looking to be a seat filler. I want to be a world changer. And so when you tell me about the story and how I can enter into that story as a volunteer, you already got my attention, because there are enough people asking me to check a box and to fill a spot for them. And that's not exciting. And though that might be fine for some of these other kinds of organizations, and maybe it works for them, I've just never had that work for me, because there's such a negative dialogue that goes on around disability, of people thinking that you have to be a PhD to even be friends with someone who's different. So I have to really break it down to a human story and help them understand, this is a woman a mile away from our church who doesn't know that God is madly in love with her and adores her child just the way she is. And you and I have the rare opportunity to speak that truth to her. How exciting is that, right? That's different. It's all in how we communicate that, because I'm using story instead of just asking you to complete a task. I hope that's what you were asking.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing about it is, that's going to recruit a different level person. That is,
absolutely.
If they were halfway passionate before, they're going to be
right.
fully passionate now. And that's already
yeah.
going to produce the kind of volunteer that you wanted. And it goes so beautifully. So you've set the tone for this. Now they know big picture what they're doing. So my next question goes into, you've got them, you're preparing for an event or a weekly ministry, and this is kind of loaded, and we know what the answer is.
Oh, yeah.
How important is communication when recruiting for particular ministry tasks? And I want to know, do you use different strategies when communicating the big ideas versus smaller task-related pieces that volunteers need to know? I think we can probably say you're going to use story for big ideas. What
yes.
do you use for those smaller task-related
yes.
pieces that volunteers need to know?
Because somebody's got to go buy the glue sticks, and that's not a
crime, right.
you know? That's
yeah,
just the reality.
Absolutely.
And children, I mean, I don't even know how many glue sticks I've bought in my life, but it's a lot, you know?
Right.
So you're absolutely right. So there are lots of different great tools there. First of all, I am a firm believer in empowering my leaders who are below me. So this is not scientific. It's slightly theological, but I always tell people, you know, Jesus had 12 disciples. He was fully God and fully man. I'm fully man or woman, whatever. I am not fully God, so I definitely need at least 12 around me, right? I mean, total, but I can't personally build into 12, but 6 is a good number for me. So if I can build into 6 and those 6 can have a 6, we have a really tight line of communication from leadership to leadership, like, because there's different tiers of leadership, obviously, who are making things happen. So my job at the top of this pretty level leadership plane, because trust me, there's no real hierarchy, it's more of a plane. My job is to cast vision, okay? So in Proverbs, it tells us without vision, the people will perish. So if I start to see that there's a part of the ministry that's breaking down a little bit, there's an issue where I have not cast the vision well. So I cast the vision and set the tone to help them understand the importance of the minute tasks that we're doing, like buying glue sticks, which is not exciting, but you know what? It has to get done. So then I have team leaders who are over each of those pockets of ministry. So, for example, in Inclusion World, I have a team leader who's responsible for all family communication, okay? So she is the linchpin who's going to be the one gathering all the information from families, making sure that we have all the things that we need, and making sure that it's collected in a way that I always talk to my volunteers about the asteroid principle. Principle being, if you are hit by an asteroid, you have everything so well documented and so well communicated that the show goes on and they barely notice you're gone, except that they're sad, obviously, because they did love you.
Mm-hmm.
So their job is to have all that stuff written down and curated and to keep it current and make sure it is disseminated in a way that is, you know, fairly standardized so everybody knows how to connect and interact. So I've got that person. And then I've got another person who's over logistics, because the reality is the rooms have to be set up. There have to be X number of glue sticks in the room. There have to be the craft supplies. There have to be the right name tags, all that stuff. So I have a logistics person who is figuring out, based on the information they're getting from that family team, exactly how many kids are coming, what those kids have in terms of needs, like do we need to have adaptive equipment in the rooms, do we need to have different kinds of sensory things to help support them. So they're making that assessment. I have another person who kind of works lockstep with them who is a little bit more of a skilled position, probably a person who is a special educator or has a background professionally, vocationally, working with this population, who is looking over our crafts and activities and saying, yes, these are going to be ones that are accessible for all the kids we're serving. If this activity is a little bit trickier, here are the adaptations that we would have, and those two work together and make sure that stuff all happens. Then I have another person who is the volunteer communications person. So they're understanding, okay, based on all this information that I'm getting from my co-leaders, I'm going to need X number of volunteer buddies, and they need to be volunteers who can handle this kind of situation. And so they're going to go out through the pathways of the church, because every church has a different volunteer pathway in terms of onboarding. They have different things that they require for reporting, which is smart and good and wise stewardship of people. So maybe they're using Fellowship One or whatever database their church uses to be able to cull kind of all that volunteer information. They're also going to work very closely with the scheduling volunteer, who's making sure that we have scheduled with the church to have the rooms that we need and that we've made sure we have enough chairs and all that sort of thing. So I'm trying, it's so hard to do this, you know, just over the radio, because usually in person I have kind of this flow chart that I show people how these people all connect together. And there mm-hmm. is a main leader for each of those who meets with me on a regular basis and tells me what their needs are. And then I help them, you know, it's my job to kind of coach a little bit, like, okay, here's the way that I would maybe communicate that. When we need very quick things done, we want to make sure that we're respectful. People get inundated with so much communication right now and so many notifications. I always tell my leaders, ask your team how they prefer to be notified. When I'm working with millennials, which I work with a lot of millennials, a lot of teens, they prefer to be text message. They don't want an email. They don't read email, right? So they want a quick text message telling them where they can engage, or a tweet or something like that. When I'm working with boomers, which we have a huge influx of boomers who are starting to retire, they have a lot more time on their hands. They still have a lot of life left in them, right? And a lot of wisdom and experience that they bring with them. They tend to prefer to be emailed. So we have emails that we send out, different things like that. We also have a lot of individuals who engage through Facebook or social media. So we figure out meaningful ways to do that. So we kind of start to establish a communication grid based on the people that we're serving with. So if you are, for instance, if you are serving with a church that is a college town, and you find that the bulk of your ministry volunteers, your workforces are millennials, you're going to want to spend a lot of time getting really good at text messaging, right? You're going to mm-hmm. want to know best times to reach people. If you find that you are with an older church that's more established and you're starting to have a lot of these individuals start to retire, you're going to want to get really good at email. You're going to want to make sure that you send it out in a way that it doesn't go to spam. For instance, if you send out too many at one time, it can get flagged by Google and you're not going to get through. So you're going to learn some different ways there, which, again, that's kind of getting really down in the weeds. If people want to message me, I'm happy to kind of troubleshoot what those things can be. But you have to figure out your communication grid based on who it is that's serving with you, so that you're sending out information in a meaningful way and that there's a system to report back. And when they don't, have some accountability, not in a mean way, but just say, hey, you matter to us, and we're trying to follow up with you because we are hoping you can help us with this Sunday. Can you let us know if that's still a good thing or if you're not going to be able to make it? Also invite them to be part of the communication strategy as well. So all of my buddies in the past have been required that they would, if they can't make it on a Sunday, they have a tier of people they can call, and they first try and exhaust that tier to get their own coverage before I ever hear about it.
I think that's great.
A lot of ministry leaders are like, you're just talking about unicorns and fairy tales. It is a thing, because if you want passionate volunteers, they have to have skin in the game. They have to have ownership. And so they have real authority to say, hey, look, these are your peers who are on your team who serve at the same hour, who are background checked, been trained, you know them. If you can message them, here's how you get a hold of your replacement. And then you also, once you get your replacement, you notify your team leader for that shift to let them know, hey, I'm not going to be here, but Molly's coming in my place, and she's already, you know, ready to go. The less I am in those day-to-day communications, the better it is, because that means that my people have a high ownership of that ministry. Now,
but if they're being called by, if they're calling a peer and they're being called by a peer, it also reduces the chance of them just kind of maybe not calling in, not showing up.
Right.
Because they've been in that position of being called at the last minute to show up, maybe. I've been told that by volunteers before.
Oh, yeah. They're like, oh, it's a big deal. Like, oh, gosh, I hate to call and bother anybody. Because they understand, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the church, we are so sensitive that we're like, well, we don't want to make them do any work. That's not biblical. You know, our job as leaders is to equip the saints to do the work of the church. And equipping the saints means giving them real accountability, not this, oh, you come on Sunday, you know, you're the most important part. Well, if you're just using them as warm bodies, you're not really leaning into them the way that God meant to. And in my mind, that's poor stewardship. It's poor stewardship of the human resources the Lord's provided for you. And I think there's an accountability for that. my job as a leader is to equip the saints. And equipping the saints means that I get them what they need and I get the heck out of the way, but I am there paying attention. And so if there is a person who, and, you know, also setting up that system gives you a chance to even be a better pastoral leader. Because let's say, you know, Molly doesn't show up. That's so unlike Molly, right? So we're going to make sure we call Molly. Molly, what's going on? Hey, you know, we're not mad. We just want to make sure you're okay. You know, we had you on the books to be here on Sunday and we didn't see you. Turns out Molly's mom died and things came up. Oh my gosh, Molly, you know, how can I pray with you? Our team is going to circle the wagons and we're going to take care of you, you know, but we might not have ever known that Molly had something like that happen had we not been so lockstep in our communication, because we would have just thought Molly no-showed. Well, shame on Molly. Who needs Molly? Well, Molly, you know what? Life happened, and Molly needs her tribe to rally around her and love her the way that God designed it. So that's what authentic community looks like. I don't know if I'm getting ahead of us, but a lot of that I model in Acts 2:42 gives us this good kind of prescription on how to do life together. It talks about being in the Word and praying together and doing life together and really being a part of each other's lives. You know, there's this temptation because pastors are busy, and I know that. I have been the paid pastor. I have been the volunteer pastor, so I see both sides. So I get a little irritated when say, well, people say, oh, I'm too busy. I'm a pastor. You know, I get 100 emails. You know what? I've been one of those people who's one of the 100 emails, and I'm a part of your flock, and that, I know that's hard, but you didn't sign up to be a pastor because it's easy. So you got to figure it out, because your job is to shepherd your flock, not just give them tasks to do. So when you do life with them, which takes, I will acknowledge, it takes way more work on the front end. When people say, well, I don't have time to go to her kid's soccer game. Yes, you do. You don't have time not to go to her kid's soccer game, because if she's one of your core leaders and you are pouring into her as an individual and encouraging her as a mother, and you're showing up at her kid's soccer game and you're having coffee with her just to have coffee with her, trust me, she's going to go the extra mile and they're going to storm the gates with you because you are doing life together. That's what real ministry is. We have unfortunately tried to make church like a corporation to the point that there are certainly some things we can learn from corporations, but we have taken the pastoral piece out of ministry and made it an administrative role, and it was never meant to be that. It was never meant to be that. So we want to make sure that we are doing life with them, and when we do that and it's reflected in our communication grids, you're going to find you're going to get people who are really, really committed. Just last week I did a wedding for it's so crazy. He's grown up. He was getting married. He was my intern for 2 years in college, but I did his wedding, and my table at the reception was, I know, I was like, I'm feeling awfully old all of a sudden. I did his wedding, and there were three couples that were a part of one of my best teams I ever built called Team Big, and we haven't served together actively for probably 6 years, and that night, it was just such a cool thing. You know, they were sharing stories with me about how their family was different because of the way that they were led, and how their family cares about, like, their kids have grown up being really inclusive because they understood that was a value that we had as a team. And so, you know, my husband and I were walking back to our car after the wedding, and he said, babe, that's a huge deal. He said, I know you poured your life into those individuals. And he said, can you even believe, you know, years later, they're talking about how that was different. And I said, that was just God using me. And when you show up and do the things the way he tells you to do the things, cool stuff happens, right? And it changes the way people interact. So I can't stress enough, keeping those healthy lines of communication open with people will create opportunities for you to be pastoral in their lives, and that's huge.
No, I just, what you said has been such an encouragement to me personally. And ministry leaders, if you lean this way a little bit like I do, you will hear people tell you that you're not spending your time well. or that you can't do it this way, I encourage you to do it anyway. Please try this and do it. Try doing it this way. God will honor the work of your hands by caring about people first. The same way he honors the Sabbath, he will honor the rest of your week if you will put these people that are pouring out for him first, if you will shepherd them. So, Harmony, this leads perfect into this next thing. We're trying to keep this passion alive in these people, and life happens to them, and their life gets hard. there are some signs that a volunteer, or we call them here at the church where I serve, we call them ministry partners, because anybody can volunteer.
That, by the way. I always love seeing that.
We call them ministry partners, or partners in ministry, or maybe losing their passion because maybe they've been working a lot, or maybe life's just hard for them and it doesn't have anything to do with the ministry, but they've got a lot going on. What are some ways we can reignite that spark for ministry, maybe across the board in our ministry, or maybe just with one volunteer?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna use two words here, prevention and retention. So first of all, if possible, we want to stop that from happening. So it's the whole, you know, preventative care versus responsive care. So one of the things that I have asked and have encouraged as I've consulted over the years is when you're working with your ministry leaders, I hate the word volunteer. I hate it because volunteer implies that I'm going to check a box and I'm going to leave. I don't own anything. And it devalues their contribution. So I try not to use that word. I'm like you. I love watching your posts about ministry partners because that's the right thinking. So for me, mine were all leaders, and then their leaders had leaders because their job is to raise up other leaders. So we had a lot of leaders, and that's not a bad thing. So I will ask them because I want them to understand that I will make sure that I'm making a commitment to them too, because I always tell people cannot give away that which they don't receive. So I would love to give you $1 million, Vanjie. Nobody's given me $1 million. So unfortunately, I don't have enough money in that bank, but I would give it to you in a minute, right? Okay, so we have to think of there are relational banks, right? We each have a piggy bank. And if I am not investing into that relationship, I'm never going to be able to make a withdrawal, right? I'm never going to be able to ask them to step up to another level of leadership, whether if I'm not pouring into them and investing in a way that is meaningful. So I'm going to ask them, can you and I agree that you're going to make a one-year commitment to lead in this way? And put it on paper. You know, sit down together and put it on paper and say, okay, for a year, here's what I need from you. And you can get pretty specific, like I need a weekly commitment or I need a biweekly commitment or whatever. And then say, okay, all that being said, this is a partnership. You and I are in this together. I'm not above you. We are co-leaders in the kingdom. So now tell me, what do you need from me, right? So what is going to help encourage you and make sure that you are filled up for the year? And so I would love, for me, I always like to have FaceTime. Like I said, I didn't do this with every leader in our ministry, but the leaders who I was directly caring for, I would have one-on-one meetings with them on a monthly basis based on when it was good for them. So sometimes that meant I went to their house for dinner. Sometimes that meant I had coffee with them, or I had Diet Coke, they had coffee. I might meet them before or after a church service. I might go have lunch with them in an area where they already work. I might sit with them and meet with them while their kid has soccer practice. I've done that a few times. But we have this regular point of contact. And the first thing we talk about when we meet is not the ministry stuff. It's how are you doing, really? Not, oh, I'm fine. No. Tell me, what's going on? The good, the bad, and the ugly. How can I be praying for you? How can I be investing in you in a way that is kingdom-minded? And so figuring out what that stuff is. Then once we get that out of the way, and I don't mean out of the way in a bad way, but like I have to have that foundation before I talk to you about anything else. I have to have a foundation of a relationship with you as a human being who is valuable and precious in the kingdom. And once you and I have an understanding on where we both are in our journey, then let's talk about, hey, what are we doing in ministry? Like, how can I help support you? Are there some roadblocks that have come up? Because my job is as your pastor is to eliminate those roadblocks. So what does that look like? Is this support system I have in place for you, is this working? Do we need to change it? Having those regular conversations helps. It's your preventative care. It doesn't mean they're not going to get burnout, but it means you're going to know way ahead of time before it happens. Then when you see the signs of fatigue, when they're not showing up at as many meetings, or they're not as excited about things, their behavior, their demeanor changes in the meetings, the way they talk about the ministry starts to change. I mean, your job as a leader is to become, I mean, you have to know your flock. And a lot of people miss out on, you know, in scripture, Jesus talks about shepherds a lot, and there's a lot to learn there, even though I don't own sheep. But a good shepherd smells like his sheep. His sheep know his name. He sleeps in the fields with them. It is your job to know your sheep. You are to smell like your sheep. You are to know, they should know your voice and you should know theirs. So you have to just be about the business of your sheep fully, so that when you start to see the warning signs of, you know, Jim's not been coming to the meetings, and historically Jim gets excited about this and he just didn't seem to care about it or be excited about it. And then personally one-on-one say, hey, how are things going? And if they say fine, say, if that's the case, I'm glad, but here were my concerns because I noticed this and I'm wondering, like, was I off on that? Help me become a better friend, a better leader. Oh, no, you weren't off. I had a hard day at work. Or, no, you're right. I think I might be getting burnt out, but I didn't want to say anything. Well, let's talk about that. Let's find a way to give you some respite, to give you some rest, and give them permission to take a break. It's okay to have a season where you're like, I just need a minute, you know. God rested, and he's God, so that's a thing. But by having that kind of preventative approach, you're going to see it so much, and you're going to be able to help them get to a place of wholeness so that they don't burn out completely, because that's just a total loss when that happens. It just makes, I mean, it grieves the Lord. It grieves the ministry.
And what a waste. What a waste for all of us. That could have been stopped just by being genuine and transparent and human with one another. Human with one another. Harmony, you've given us so much today, so much of yourself and so much of your experience. Can you recommend any specific resources to our listeners that are helpful tools for recruitment, whether it's a book that's been meaningful to you? I know you've already given out one website, communication apps, anything that in any of those categories that you think is a great tool that you've run across that you use a lot.
Absolutely. A quick logistical tool that's really great if you want to be able to track projects and coordinate schedules and all that sort of thing, and maybe your church doesn't have that, you know, expensive, fancy software. There's an online-based program. You can get a membership for, I think, as little as $10 a month, which most ministries will find you 10 bucks a month, called Basecamp. Basecamp is a fantastic tool used in the corporate world. I use it here at the creative agency, where you can create projects, you can add different individuals to a project, you can collect notes there, you can email through Basecamp, and it still tracks in your personal email, but it tracks in Basecamp as well, so the whole group can see what's going on. It's a great way to use technology to build that asteroid principle. And it's very user-friendly. So there's not a huge learning curve for it. They have a lot of great support. Also, there's a site called formstack.com, where if you are trying to collect information from your leaders or from families that you're serving, like surveys, forms, that sort of thing, being able to automate that really helps to expedite the process for everyone, and then you have it stored in their cloud. And again, I say this because not everyone has, you know, that fancy church software, or even if they do, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that they need. Formstack allows you to create those forms. So if you wanted to do a volunteer onboarding thing, that's a great way that you can build it. You drag and drop things. Trust me, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And then, as I mentioned before, assessme.org is a fantastic tool to use as a leader to be able to get a good assessment of the skills and abilities and passions of the people that you're leading. And it also gives you some nice information of, hey, as a leader, heads up, if you do this, it's really going to frustrate this individual. Because I know I personally, the last thing I want to do is frustrate someone. I want to empower them. So it's helpful for me to know, okay, when I'm communicating with this individual, don't do it this way, because that's just really going to make them crazy. So assessme.org is great. So those are some nice online tools that are very accessible. In terms of books, there is a book called Tribes by Seth Godin. It is short. You could read it on a plane ride. You could read it probably one night before bed. But it talks about building a team, building your own tribe, and what really motivates and inspires people. It does talk about story and being able to reignite things when people start to get a little bit locked down in the details. So it's a great quick read. Also, there's an older Andy Stanley book, but it's an oldie, but it's a good read. I think sometimes in our culture, our temptation is, oh, if the book's not been written in the last year, it's not relevant. And that might be true in some cases, but this is one that I have given out so many times I've lost count. But Andy Stanley wrote a book called Visioneering, and it is a great book to help people understand how do you keep casting that vision and keeping that vision fresh and in front of the people so that they don't, you know, where there is no vision, the people will perish. And so we don't want that as leaders. So those are some kind of quick tools off the top of my head that I think are really helpful for folks.
Awesome. And if you guys would like Harmony as a resource, I know that, as she mentioned earlier, she would be willing to be that. So, Harmony, can you give out any of your information as a resource for any of our listeners today? How can they get in touch
with you? Absolutely. Yeah, well, as Vanji mentioned, I am honored. I am an ambassador for 99 Balloons, which is a nonprofit that works both here domestically in the U.S. and globally to engage the story of disability. So as an ambassador for 99 Balloons, I do consult with churches on a regular basis who maybe want to have a phone call set up where we just talk very specifically about your teams and some challenges you're facing, and kind of come up with some action plan items for you. So we at 99 Balloons have a team of ambassadors who do that, and I am one of them and more than happy to help you in that way. Also, please look me up on Facebook if you're on social media. I would dare say half my friends on Facebook are people I've met from ministry conferences. So usually at least once a week, someone will private message me a quick question, and I'm absolutely happy to engage with you that way. And you can also reach me at harmony@99balloons.org. So please reach out. One of the blessings of technology is that we can connect with each other in a quick way. So I would love to be able to encourage you any way that I can.
Harmony, I just from the bottom of my heart, you just have no idea. You'll be getting something from me later today. Personally, what an encouragement this has been for me, not only in special needs ministry, but if you're a ministry leader who's listening that you've been told special needs ministry is going to siphon off the rest of your volunteers, as so many of you probably are. Not true, by the way. Not true.
Not true at all. No.
You know, This is true across the board in any kind of ministry, cradle to the grave, all of these principles. For ongoing conversation on this topic, you can join our CM Connect group, Shaping Special Hearts, at cmconnect.org. You can also connect with us on Facebook on Shaping Special Hearts. That's our Facebook page where I am going to be posting links to some of the resources that Harmony has mentioned earlier. You can find me on Twitter at Vanji Rodenbeck or on my blog, VanjiRodenbeck.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Vanji Rodenbeck. Join Katie Weatherby for our next show, where she is going to have another amazing topic that is particularly relevant to special needs ministry. A big thank you to our sponsor, Standard Publishing and CM Connect, for making this ongoing conversation possible that is just continual free training to help us all sharpen ourselves and stay connected and not feel so alone in a ministry that can feel so isolating and overwhelming. I pray that your hearts have been encouraged today, especially as we are always in a season of recruiting and bringing people into ministry so that you can go out in ministry and shape the hearts of others to win people to Christ.
What do you want kids in your Sunday school classrooms to learn? What's in God's Word? How to apply God's Word to life situations? And how to have a personal relationship with Jesus? Heart Shaper Children's Sunday School Curriculum takes kids through the Bible five times by the time they reach sixth grade and establishes a love for God and His Word that will last them a lifetime. Teaching is easy and learning is fun. See what's new at www.heartshaper.com.